Beach easy.
Once I get obligated to something, especially in the business world, I'm committed.
Yeah.
That's my mistress. That's my lover. So I didn't want to have another situation where it tore between the two.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. From personal growth and self-discovery to challenges and victories, we discuss it all. Join us as we dive into the extraordinary stories of ordinary people all the way to the end.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. I'm Julie Ellis, and today I'm joined by Reuben Hyman, a Myrtle Beach native who learned the value of earning money from a young age. Growing up in Myrtle Beach in the 50s wasn't easy, but he found ways to hustle and earn the things he wanted. How would you describe yourself as a child?
I wanted to be very independent.
Yeah.
And I showed that by the way, even as I grew up.
Did your parents kind of leave you on your own as a kid?
Well, they almost had to because yeah. I had, like I said, I developed a very independent nature very early.
Yeah. What kind of person was your mom?
She was a Gentile Southern lady.
Yeah.
Very quiet, but come off of a farm. She was the oldest in her family. And she got into waitressing. And she waited for several restaurants as a teenager in the Florence area. But then when we came over here to Myrtle Beach, she started with a well-known and often talked about restaurant, the Cozy Corner.
What did your dad do for a living?
My dad, his first thing he did here, he had a couple of failures. His first thing he did was he bought two cars and he created a cab company.
Oh.
But he got caught just like all of them at that time. Came wintertime, nobody was taking cabs.
Right.
Because there was no tourist there to take it.
Yeah. Do you remember the day that Hurricane Hazel hit?
I remember when it came. We stayed until a tree fell on top of our house.
Oh, wow.
We were still here.
Where was your home? Was it within a couple blocks of the ocean, or were you inland more?
I was more inland at that time where my family was.
You were about 10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when the tree hit, that's when my mother said, told my dad, let's go.
Oh, wow.
And so we took off, and we went to Florence, to her parents' house. And came back the very next day. And to my surprise, my father wanted to go down to see what the damage was. I still remember today that the sand from that hurricane was up to almost Highway 17.
Oh, wow.
And there was washing machines and refrigerators and different parts of buildings all over between Ocean Boulevard and Highway 17. So, but they went immediately to work to rebuild immediately. And that was really the feeling that you got that, hey, listen, this is just something we got to do and clean it up. And before the next season, it was back to almost normal, not
wow.
exactly normal, but almost back to normal. Of course, missing a lot of houses, like I said earlier, on the south end, which led development of hotels and motels on the south end. And we were ready.
Reuben's parents and the community where he grew up instilled in him the value of hard work and striving to achieve your goals. It was a time when children understood that they needed to earn money to buy the things they wanted.
That generation of kids, they all were trying to find things to do and to make money. Because we all kind of developed that kind of independent spirit about making money because it wasn't expected of us by our parents, or in some cases, they didn't need to. But all their friends, we all worked.
Yeah.
It was a taken that you get a certain age, you start working, no matter what your parents' position was. because that's what basically most of your friends did.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you want to get a consider a job, one of the first things I ever did to make money was go around and to all the different Coke machines and stuff and get the bottle caps. Because at one time, there was a theater here called the Rivoli that they would let you in free for 7 bottle caps.
No kidding.
Yes. When I was real young, the theater to go to was the Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Most went us kids went to the Broadway because on Saturday, they had a Saturday matinee. Oh, well, it would start about 1 o'clock, and you didn't get out until about 6. And that's because they had cartoons, all these short features, and maybe a couple of main movies. And that was a other job I had on a Saturday. I was so boiled peanuts so that I could get enough money to go to the movie, buy some popcorn and buy some candy and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When I was younger. What I really enjoyed was when I really went on to be my own boss.
Yeah.
When I say that, I was a paper boy.
Uh-huh.
And I started selling newspapers down on the boulevard.
How old were you then?
About 10. And I was, and it was the paper was 5 cents. It was Monday through Friday. Didn't do it on Saturdays and Sundays, but I will tell you a story that what I did. So the first day I sold a paper, I made 14 cents.
Wow.
And that was like from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to about 8 o'clock at night.
Wow.
And I said, I got to figure out how to do this. What can I do? And this is where I think I got a lot of my aggressive and my ability to communicate to people.
Right.
And what I did was, and people laugh at this when I tell them this story, I would go up to a couple, and of course, I wasn't going to take no for an answer. So I would ask them if they wanted a paper, and most of the time I did hear a no. But I learned in life that a no doesn't mean that they mean no. It just means you hadn't got a yes yet. But I came up with this thing, and I looked at the guy, and I said, if I could tell you where you bought your shoes, will you buy a newspaper? And, of course, he'd look at me like this, and then his wife, most of the time, would look and say, yeah. She was laughing, smiling, and she said, yeah, do it. Buy a paper if he can tell you where you bought your shoes. He said, okay, I'll buy a paper from you. Tell me where I bought your shoes. And I paused for a moment, kind of looked down, and then I looked up and I said, at a shoe store. immediately she goes, cracks up, buy a paper.
Throughout his childhood and teenage years, Reuben worked a variety of odd jobs. Whether it was being a lifeguard at the beach or running a booth at the local carnival, he was always finding new ways to make his way in the world. He went to college, earned a degree in marketing, and during his final years of school, he and his friends opened a head shop. It was during this time that Reuben discovered his talent for selling clothing.
I didn't go into the clothing business because that's where I was intending to be. So we heard about this place in Five Points. That's a little area that's not too far away from the campus of the University of South Carolina. And this couple had rented this house, and they were selling black lights and posters. And we thought we could expand it to doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made a deal with them, and they went ahead. And I paid them a certain amount of money each month to rent it. So I expanded it from papers and black lights and posters to having vinyl records. And so I started the clothing part upstairs with the bell-bottom jeans and all the hippie-type stuff, low-rider pants and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I ran it, and Tim was a kind of a partner with me. And we paid up bill, and they paid their bill, the people we had there, and they made money. We kind of broke even in the clothing part because mm-hmm. we were still a little early yet for South Carolina.
Right.
To be wearing that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it caught on right shortly afterwards. But by that time, I graduated from college. And then, of course, Tim didn't want to pursue it, keep it going. So, basically, what I did with him was I just gave him all the inventory of the clothing. I said, you do whatever you want to do with it. And and we split up, and then I don't know whatever happened to it after we left.
After the shop closed, Ruben spent some time searching for his next opportunity. Little did he know, a chance encounter at the local tennis court would set the course for his next big career move.
I was playing tennis in the area called Windermere Apartment area, and they had a tennis court. And I met this guy, and he seemed interesting to me at the time. His name was Richard Squire. And he was in the clothing business as a salesman for a well-known women's coordinated sports line. So we got talking, and I got to tell him how I was dissatisfied. And he said, well, look, he says, I'm getting ready to go into my own business, start my own company. And so he said, my territory could be available, and I could give you a good recommendation. He may not give you the whole territory because he had Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. And was doing quite well for that time period, because this is early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, I'd be interested. He said, well, let me call him and set it up, but I got to wait till I'm ready to depart,
mm-hmm.
because I got partners that we're going to start up our own clothing company. And I said, okay. And so I had to wait for probably about another month, and he called me up, and he says, his name is Ken Ross, and he's the president of the company. And he's willing to pay for your flight up there to interview you. And if you were anything like I've told him you were, you may get the job. And sure enough, I went up there, and we hit it off pretty well. He asked me very candid, and I answered him back very candid, have you ever done any traveling as far as selling? I said, no, but I basically have. I told him a little bit about my clothing experience. I told him about my younger experience in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, as a salesman, especially emphasizing the sales part,
mm-hmm.
because basically a lot of the things I did was a continuation of selling.
Right.
Even though it may be called a different thing, whether or not I was a lifeguard on the beach selling suntan oil or renting beach chairs or floats or umbrellas. And so he said, let me take you on a three-week cruise. So he started me off a week with a salesman on the road. And then after that, I went to New York for 2 weeks in a showroom in New York. And I guess he got reports from the salesman and from the New York guy who was the head guy for this particular company. Got good reports, and he says, call me back in. I flew up there, and he said, okay, we're ready to go with you.
Ruben quickly found he had a knack for selling women's clothing. He loved how trends changed from season to season, and he had a great eye for what would sell well. However, he began to have different opinions from his company and decided it was time for a change.
From the mom and pops, and what I saw what was selling in the stores, because when I'd go into the store, I would talk to the sales girls and all this, find out what's selling, what colors were doing well, all this type of stuff from all the two states that I was in a bit originally. And then eventually I got another state, which was Arkansas. And by the time I got Arkansas, I knew what was happening. I knew my business. I knew the clothing business for women, and that the young women of the generation that were buying coordinated sportswear, which means it was an easy way to buy clothing for women. Well, I was with Junior House, and I kept telling them, we need to get into other things because coordinated sportswear is not what the younger ones want. And so when I saw that that was not going to happen, I decided I was going to step out of that and create my own thing, and that way I would then get Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas, because most of the lines out of California, New York didn't have salesmen, especially the small companies that were on that same path as I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I coined the expression, and I can say that I coined this expression, related separates. And that's what the girls wanted. They wanted to be able to put their own type of blouse, their own type of bottoms together.
But they'd still be related. So when you said you started your own thing, what did you start, your own distribution company?
The first 2 years, I would get different small companies out of the different areas that were manufacturing, like California and New York areas.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about it, they were related separates, and I could put the pieces together and sell them as packages, you know, to my stores, because like I said, I emphasize mostly on mom and pop stores. I made them money even when I was selling coordinated sportswear, and they didn't forget that. So when they saw me going on my own because of my history with them, Ruben, we're going to give it a try, because you saying this is the direction to go. This is what we're going to do. The thing was, I wanted to protect my companies, my position with these mom and pop stores, because they would turn on other people out of territories I hadn't traveled yet. Uh-huh. And so they were actually kind of selling for me.
Right. Right.
He's on to the new thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Ruben's new venture was thriving, and he was making a good living in sales. Little did he know, a big opportunity was right around the corner, and a pair of pants just might go on to change his life.
There was this young man, a few years younger than me. We used to see each other on the road. He represented a coordinated sportswear line, and he saw what I saw going on. We used to meet and talk about it. And we also talked, what category would you want to do if you wanted to start your own thing? And so I told him, from my experience from selling separate sweaters, separate blouses, separate pants, separate this, that, the way to start would be with pants. I said, I'm going to continue to do this, because he said, I'm going to get out of the, because by that time he had transferred over to California. So he called me up one night and said, I've got a chance to get a factory that makes menswear jackets, but we can convert, because it's a different type of sewing machine you use when you make menswear quality as far as stitching, as opposed to women. So he called me up just about a year, and he said, Ruben, he said, we just hit $1 million in sales in 1 year. Are you interested? So I said, come to my showroom. So he came to my showroom. I let him bring his product in the corner, and I would refer everybody over there, because what I was doing was doing my homework again, because I wanted to hear their feedback about it. So he got a few orders from some of my accounts, because I told him to give him a try, give him a shot. I think he's on to something. And by that time, they pretty well knew I had the pant line that I had. I was not really happy with the way they were delivering. I was happy with their product, but I wasn't happy with the way they were delivering my accounts. So consequently, within the first 2 weeks of them hitting the stores he sold, they were calling me up for reorders.
Oh, wow.
And he said, Ruben, you won't believe this pant. This pant is all what we want in a pant for women. And it's not that higher priced than ones that are out there now. He said, but it's got better construction and it's got a better fit. And they would say, and the fit's the best fitting pant we've ever had. I called him up and I said, okay, you passed the test. Send me your line. I'm going to give up my separate business and I'm going to start selling every one of my accounts. And that's what we did. By 1983, so that's 8 years, the company was doing $42 million.
While Ruben found great success in his career, his relationships were less successful. During his time in sales, he got married, and although they were happy for a while, Ruben eventually realized their relationship couldn't give him what he wanted.
Well, I was going to ask you, because you were on the road all the time.
All the time.
Like, if you even had time for...
That was probably one of the reasons of the marriage not doing well.
Yeah.
Same thing was happening with my father, with my mother, but my mother had more patience than she. So I was on the road
a lot.
Well,
that happens. You can't neglect your relationship.
Well, I was on the road. That was my priority.
Working.
It was doing that.
Yeah.
And thinking that she would go along with it. Because I'd have her meet me sometimes if I stayed several days. I'd fly her into, like, New York for a couple of days, you know, because I was in New York, I was in Atlanta, I was in Miami, I was in Chicago, I was all over. At that time, I guess my mindset was that if I was giving her a good life, she's got whatever she wanted.
Yeah.
I basically forgot the main thing, reason, and that was the relationship.
Did you have children with her?
We adopted a son. Because that was another thing that kind of messed up the marriage. We lived together for more years than we were married, because I met her almost right away when I got in the clothing business, because she was from Mississippi. But she finally pressured me to get married because she said she wanted to start having a family.
Oh, okay.
Well, on the honeymoon, I found out she changed her mind.
But you wanted kids.
Yeah, well, I got.
That's why you got married.
That's why I got married. I have to raise a family.
Do you think she tricked you, or you think she just changed her mind?
No, I think she was unsure about herself.
Yeah.
And knowing me and my personality, she thought it best to tell me right up front that she decided she changed her mind. And I did pressure her.
Yeah.
About us having a kid, stop taking the pill, that kind of thing.
How did you then come about adopting a child?
We thought that would be
a compromise.
And we adopted a 2-week-old boy, but I wanted to have out my own child.
Oh.
And she didn't want to, still wanted to do it.
So you kept asking her, and she just flat out said no.
Yeah, finally, I told her that it just wasn't going to work out.
Well, then who did the boy stay with?
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have a relationship with him after then?
No.
Why?
Well, because she actually changed his last name. Took my name away and gave him another last name.
Well, how old was he then?
By that time?
Yeah.
When it was all finished done, maybe about 2.
Oh, so he was just tiny.
Oh, yeah. He was still small.
So he didn't even know you.
He didn't know me. Oh. And, of course, I didn't know how to get in touch with her afterwards because I didn't know where she was.
Yeah.
And, just a combination of all these things that finally come to a point where it could not be solved.
How long were you married for?
Actually, only 3 years, but we were together almost 7.
And then you just don't know what happened. She changed her name and off. She went. And
Never knew whether she stayed in Dallas at that time or whether she went somewhere else.
Years after his first marriage ended, Reuben married again, this time to a woman he met while traveling abroad for work. By this time, he had transitioned from clothing sales to the restaurant business, but was so immersed in his work that he wasn't sure if he was ready for a committed relationship.
She was from Costa Rica.
Okay.
And I had been, by that time I was in the restaurant business. And so I had been hearing about Costa Rica. So I went down there a couple of times. And then one time I went down there and I met her because I was interested in opening a business there and moving there. So I really liked the country. I liked what was going on down there. And so I went to this Department of Resources and she worked there. And because I didn't speak much Spanish and I was trying to use my broken Spanish that I had learned somewhat in college, and they all thought I was funny and that kind of stuff and thought I was humorous. And so we got to talking with each other, and she spoke very little English. And so we had some sort of communication. So I made a couple more trips down there, and it kept getting a little bit more familiar and stuff like that. And she kept pushing to have something going. And I told her I wasn't really wanting to get into a long-term relationship. After several times of going back and forth about long-term relationship, that kind of stuff, she finally sent me a text that hit home, opened the door. And that's basically what she said. You'll never know unless you open the door.
Oh. Do you feel like your door was closed because of the pain from your first marriage?
Oh, yeah. It was no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt the reason why I went. It was almost 15 years from that time of the divorce and pretty close to 20. I just didn't want it. I think some of the reason, Julie, is that once I get obligated to something, especially in the business world, I'm committed.
Yeah.
That's my mistress. That's my lover. So I didn't want to have another situation where it tore between the two. When you start early like I did and making money.
Yeah.
To get what you want. Because my family didn't have a lot of money.
Right.
Me being the first child, I didn't want to be a burden because I wanted nicer things. I wanted to be able to buy things that I wanted to buy, not have to go ask for the money.
Right.
So that's where that independent nature came about.
But you did agree to marry that lady.
I did.
And how did you feel when you did? Were you reserved at all about it?
Or? I certainly was.
Yeah.
I certainly was.
So you had a voice saying, don't do it.
I had hesitation.
Well, why did you marry her, even though you were unsure about it?
I wanted to prove to myself that I was wrong.
Ah.
And that's another lesson that you have to learn in life. You often get the chances to always make a choice.
How long into the marriage did you figure out that wasn't going to be the, what you secretly hoped it would be?
Probably within the first 3 years.
Yeah.
And we were married from 2003 to 2015.
Oh, that's kind of a long marriage.
But it was...
not good?
No.
As his life progressed, Reuben came to understand that his career was the most important aspect of his life. He went on to achieve major successes, and as he looks back on life and forward into his twilight years, he offers a unique perspective on what it means to make your way in the world.
I've been quite into a philosophical type of thinking since college.
Yeah.
It's from my days on the streets in Myrtle Beach on the boulevard.
Yeah.
They had a profound effect on the way I thought about a lot of things in life. I interacted with a lot of different people at a very young age, of people older, not too much older, older, very old.
Yeah, from all destinations and
communicated with them.
Yeah.
I didn't keep my head down and shy away and come acting like I didn't, you know, like you see some people do. I was up there with my eyeballs with their eyeballs. Because I was interested in what they were going to say. Because I think if you really are interested in people, you can learn from people. What I've learned is that you can be a mentor. You can pass on good thoughts and about many different subjects. But it's always the individual has to make that decision for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people stop learning. And they're satisfied and complacent with that. And that's fine if that's your choice, because, see, the one thing I will give people 100%, your choice is your choice, but don't make your consequences my consequences. And I try to encourage it, not by my words, but by my actions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that for quite a while with a lot of different areas. And when I tell you that I wake up every day with a smile on my face, I literally do, because I know how precious that day is. But one of the keys, I think, to longevity and a good, healthy personality is your mood. Your mood will control most major things that are going on in your life. If you got a good mood, some people call it outlook. You got a positive, say, whatever term or adjective, adverb you want to use. But the simpler word is the mood. You got to have a good mood each day. It can't be up and down. It can't be happy. It can't be sad. It's got to be a good mood every day.
Reuben built a life he's proud of. Though he's encountered his fair share of roadblocks along the way, he hopes his story can inspire others to never give up on their goals and always keep a positive attitude.
If you've been inspired by this story or any others, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review.
We don't just get away at the beach, we get together. Because no matter what floats your boat, we're floating right along with you. With over 2,000 restaurants, live music all day and night, and endless attractions, Myrtle Beach was made for having fun and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 miles where you belong, the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.